Jim Taylor back on the WMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. A true honor to have Roger Coleman in studio with us on the WMJ Sports Line. Again, he brought radio to Alito back in June of 1979. June 11th, 1979 was the first day on the air. John, the first high school game we ever would have broadcast here would have been that fall, right?
Right.
Do you remember?
Oh, I do, because I lied to Roger in the interview process, because my original thing was to come here and sell advertising and do the sports. And then he said, oh, by the way, you're going to manage the place, too. And I'm like, I don't know anything about radio. Because Don, what was Don's last name? He would bring me up here and teach me how to sell advertising. The salesman in Monmouth, the white-haired guy, or maybe it wasn't Don. I can't remember his name.
Oh,
but,
yeah. I can't think of it.
But I was news director at RAM until Alito was ready to go. And so I'd worked there. As we got closer to going on the air, in the afternoons, once I got done with the noon news, I'd jump in the car and come up here and go call on businesses. But anyway, I did basketball in college. I did not do football. I did not do baseball. Of course, we didn't do baseball back then. But I told her, oh, yeah, I can do football. Sure. So the first broadcast was Alito, Galva, football for the season opener in 79.
Was it here, do you know? Or you
I remember? Think it was at Galva. And I was brutal. It was bad. It was bad. I thought, oh, I can do this. I mean, I watch a million games on TV. Oh, I was horrible. I had no idea where the ball was half the time. I mean, it was bad. It was not good.
Didn't you have a spotter with you?
Oh yeah, but we didn't know what we were doing. We were pretty lost. But hey, nobody did it, so people bared with us, so to speak.
So was it? From an equipment standpoint, how did it work back then? Was it basically the
It was a telephone. Was yeah. It? And unlike today, we had it was pretty antiquated equipment. I mean, the board operator would have to say, tell us when to go.
Yeah.
Okay, 3-2-1, go, and we'd start talking and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, and you know, Roger, a big part of local radio to make it work is local programming, and much of that local programming involves high school sports. So you knew that coming in, that high school sports was going to be a big part of the future of this station. And I think, you know, I know working here, I always tell Marty Flaherty, he's a basketball official, he's like, Taylor, why do you guys do so many games? And I'm like, because I got to feed my babies.
Yeah.
I mean, how important, I mean, local sports is so important to local radio, and I think that's one of our great success stories here, is because we do so many games, so many different schools. That's why we have the great success. So
well,
how important is it?
My wife had a an aging aunt, and she couldn't get to the games, but she could sure hang on to every word on the broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And you just never know who's listening out there.
Oh, I know. Especially with now, you know, you can stream games on the internet. That's the big thing that has broadened kind of our horizons here. And I always tell people that, you know, I don't get in this debate about, you know, who the best radio station is. I just tell them we're the local radio station. And I think the local radio station, when you say local, you always win. Right? I
mean, right.
Don't you? Well, and I thought, too, I heard a story about you. You know, when you talk about being one of the true radio pioneers, I think you hired one of the first African Americans ever to broadcast in Galesburg. Is that right, Jimmy Carr? And he still does games today.
That's right.
That's pretty neat to be part of that story. So
right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, part of that situation was that all of a sudden the government decided that African Americans weren't getting a fair shake, and they were right. So I thought, well, it's going to come to radio. And I thought, in fact, I called the guy at the Illinois Power Company in Galesburg, and I said to him, I said, I'd like to hire one of your two black workers. And he said, that would be all right. Well, I debated between two of them. And I ended up with Jimmy, he's still going strong.
Yeah, and I know, I see him around the games.
And I always kid him. I said, "You're the best color man I've ever known," but he would do color, and where so many times I had white guys, all they wanted to do was talk about when they played, and Jimmy always talked about the ones that were down on the floor.
Yeah, that's
and,
important.
And he's still doing it, and he's an amazing guy.
Well, and I tell people, this is a personal note for me, how I got to Aledo, I interviewed for a job initially at WGEN in Geneseo, and you didn't hire me. No, just kidding. But through that interview process, a couple months later, I got a call after I graduated from SIU Edwardsville from a John Hoshite in Aledo, Illinois, and they came out here and interviewed and got the job. So thank you.
Well, I remember broadcasters like John would call me or I'd call John as we were looking for people, because a lot of times somebody comes in and you'd love to hire them, but you didn't have a spot for them. And you might call in and say, well, boy, so-and-so was in here and I'd love to have had him, but I just don't have room for him. And that's the way you pick people up.
So when we go back, what are some of the growing pains? When you look back to 1979, you know, it's like a newborn baby here with this radio station. Do you remember some of the growing pains of, you know, after the station signed on? What were some of the challenges?
Probably advertising. Advertising and lightning.
Right.
Well, and then, when, you know, back in the day, you know, now I know, well, you always want more advertising, I get that. But, you know, there's no question the station has a solid footing with area advertisers. What about back then? You know, trying to get your foot in the door and trying to get the credibility and things of that nature. How challenging was that? Because you said, so WHBF, I assume, they sold this area pretty heavily back then?
Right. They were the big dog.
Do you remember Joe Anderson?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Joe Anderson was their sales guy, and he was in town every, let's say you knew by a clockwork, Joe was in Aledo every Monday
or
something like that.
So you guys had to go mano a mano with him?
Yeah.
And he was what you call a nice guy.
Yeah, very
and,
nice
I
guy.
I mean, he was not high pressure. He was just a nice guy. I don't know if Joe's still alive or not. I would doubt it. But.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So that was like the...
Well, like
that was the rivalry, you would say?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that and the Times Record. And like Roger said, we had a very cordial working relationship with Paul Behan and the Times Record. And so we just competed against them. One of the big things that I tell people that helped our popularity was funeral notices. When WHBF quit doing funeral notices.
Really?
Oh, yeah. People started calling in saying... that didn't listen to us, called in and said, do you do funeral notices? Oh, yeah, 7, noon, and 5. Okay, good, I'm listening to you. And they'd hang up. And that was big because Roger, you basically counter-programmed Aledo to match HBF exactly. And his philosophy was, if they think HBF is local, wait till they hear us, because we're going to have on what happened at the courthouse, Mercer County Courthouse, and in the different towns. And so if they think they're local, if we can just get them to listen to us, they'll really hear local.
When did you think that you, like, I don't know if it's fair to say I got them, but when did you think that you kind of, I mean, when was the moment where you finally said, I don't know if it's fair to say we won this battle, but, you know, this is our market now, so
I think
you
it's
go
when,
ahead and leave.
I think it was when sales picked up. You know, once the business has trusted you, wouldn't you say, Roger? Once the business has trusted you, that's a big help.
But was there like a certain? I mean, how many years did that take? You think, or I mean, where you felt comfortable that you had the solid footing, that it was you before them?
Well, I'd say it takes several years. I couldn't give you an exact number, but
I think it even went into my ownership of it. I mean, we fought the good fight while Roger owned the station, but I think it still took a couple. 3 years after, even after my group bought it. Because the whole initial thing was, when we bought the station, like Roger told the story I came, I can't remember who went with me, but we went down to Ram to say we'd like, because I was leaving. I had told Roger I was leaving. And so but then we put together this group to buy it, because back then interest rates were 15 to 18% for a business loan. You just couldn't. I didn't have the wherewithal. I had no net worth. I mean, you didn't have the wherewithal to borrow the money. And so we put all these guys together, and the big thing was is that, okay, they were all in, but the idea was they're in for this amount. Don't come back to them and ask for any more. So once we bought it from Roger, we kind of figured, okay, this is the most we could afford based on the advertising sales at that time. And then I had to at least do that good or better, or I was going to be forced to go back to the bank.
What year was that that you put the group
84.
In? All right.
You know, I'm trying to think. You came to me, and I was on the – my office was on the second floor.
Right.
I had a – it was in an old house in Monmouth, and you came, and you sat down at the table, and I can't remember who was with you.
Yeah. It could have been Dana Fry. He was the banker back then, so I've got to give him credit. He's the one who helped put all these guys together, and maybe Gene Cooper or Bill Longley, one of those two guys might have been with us.
Before he interjects here, I think you need to tell the listeners the cross section. Can you tell the cross section of investors?
I was going to pull it out. I was going to say Chuck Sloan, who was the manager of back then FS, Chuck Fetterman, Dean Fry, Dana Fry.
Bud Henderson, right?
Bud Henderson. Ron Ranney.
Gene Cooper.
Pat Malone with the real estate. Gene Cooper. Drawing a blank. Can picture him right now. Vic McAvoy, who was the president of Eastern Iowa Community College. At one time, I think he was the principal at New Boston. Okay, that's nine.
How many were there all together?
I think there was 12. Who am I missing? Oh, Edgar Boney. That's 10. My dad, because that was the final. Once we put all these people together, I know Dana called me and says, okay, we got everybody together, but we'd like one more person to invest. And I go, okay. And me, I was an investor. I had to borrow the money to pay my share. I didn't have the money. So the final linchpin was my father, and so they said, the guys know you, but they haven't known you that long, and they don't know how good a businessman you are, so we'd like your father to invest. If your dad will invest, everybody will feel more comfortable about it because they know you'll work hard and won't let your dad down.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. So I called my dad, and I said, Dad, would you like to...
You want my radio station? I said, in Illinois.
Here's the deal, and you got any money you can invest in me? And he said, yeah, and so... So we had a meeting right next door here with Dean Fry's old office, and we all got together, and we said, here's the deal, and everybody said okay and signed off on it, and then we went down and saw Roger.
So then you pick up the conversation. You said it was on the second floor of the Monmouth radio station.
Yep,
is it still the same building down there?
No, it's moved, but it was a nice house, all remodeled. It was kind of a cool place to have a radio station.
So then the conversation was what then on that day?
Well, I was obviously taken by surprise because I didn't have it up for sale. But, you know.
I made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, so I thought, you know.
So there was an agreement.
I have an old saying, the time to sell something is when you have a buyer.
Yeah.
And I had a buyer.
Yeah, it was a handshake. And then you had, because like I said, that was on, like, Thursday. And on we met with him, because we met Tuesday with everybody, all 13 of us. And then on Thursday we met with Roger, because I was supposed to start with Federated Media in Fort Wayne, Indiana on Monday morning.
The two great stories here are the day the station signed on in 79, an amazing story that radio comes to Aledo, but then the names John just mentioned with those group of investors, for people that live in this community, to see the cross-section of names that I saw there. I mean, that I don't know if something like that could ever happen again. That's what's so impressive about the storyline of the station.
I would say it was a blue-chip group.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, and when you sell something, you like cash. So many times people want to come in and buy your radio station. You know, they'll give you a dollar down and a dollar when you catch them.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite that low, but, you know, that that's the right kind of way to buy and sell. You know, and I think I can't remember where I went right after that.
I don't know either.
I'll have to think back.
Yeah,
on
I can't remember.
Because I ended up, I think, before I was all done, I had about somewhere around 16 or 17. Now, I had some, just Marilyn and myself, and then I had quite a few that were a fellow by the name of Shelby Harbison, who's still alive. He's about 100. He lives in Springfield. And another fellow who was deceased now by the name of Bill Hansen. And we own stations like in Morris, Illinois, and Effingham, and I'm trying to think of all the various places in Illinois. We always stayed in Illinois.
Well, and I think people, I heard the story on the Illinois Farm Bureau Radio Network. They had one of their original anchors on, and they mentioned your name. You were at kind of the ground floor of putting that network together. That's pretty impressive. I mean, kind of being the pioneer of radio here in Illinois, because we know what that network has become now.
Well, the reason that I did it is after I became the manager, we had people come in and say, you know, we'll give you some good farm programming, and we'll pay you to carry it. Well, that sounded good, because in those days we weren't doing a lot. So on came these farm programs, and they were not very good. Next thing we know, they never paid. And about the third or fourth time, I called a couple of my other broadcaster friends, and I said, we got to figure out a way, and we want somebody that's good at it and will do a good job. And I said, I think the Illinois Ag Society, because they were a small operation, and I think they had just moved to Bloomington.
From Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. And they had some good people, and I mean, they're phenomenal what they do. You carry them here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, do you get some cash for that?
No comment, no. It's a barter situation,
okay.
Roger.
Okay, all right. But
no, we carry some ads for them for their programming, but then they also buy ads with us too. Yeah. No.
All right. So we're winding down. I'm just curious from your perspective. You started in radio what year? First year in radio, you remember? Like, what was your very first year of actually being employed in radio?
Well, I got out of the University of Iowa in 1952, and seemed to me I worked a short time, and then Uncle Sam had a better deal for me.
Yeah.
And
well, thank you for your service.
Right. Well, and then I really, well, I got out of the service I was in during the Korean War, and then I got out in 1954, and I went to work in Peoria, Illinois. That was my first job. And
that was in radio?
That was in radio. And I was a nighttime DJ for young kids, and I was totally miscast.
Rockin' Roger Coleman. Yeah.
So what do you, I'm just curious.
And then I ended up at WGIL, where I spent 25 years, and went from the morning man, and I became the general manager, and had a great career there. And that's then when I got involved with John
in ownership. So what do you? So you go back to 1954 or whatever when you started, over 67, almost 70 years ago. What do you think of the industry now, local radio? I'm just curious what your observation is. You scan the dial a lot, like when you're in the car or whatever, or you kind of stay away from it? Or do you say, I do it this way? Are you that type of guy?
I'll say this. One of my favorite radio stations is WBBM in Chicago, which is an all-news station and also carries my Cubs. Although the Cubs are on other stations, and so are the Cardinals. Yeah. I think those are the – and there's a few that carry the White Sox, but they when I was in the business, I carried the White Sox, but and I remember I knew every White Sox fan in Galesburg. There were about two dozen of them.
All right, so, but, I mean, when you listen to, you know, WBBM's different. I mean, they're a major market institution. But what do you listen to them, but do you think local radio is in a good place right now, or small market, more small market radio? What do you think of the small market radio product in 2017 now? Did you listen to it that much?
Not as much as I used to. I try to listen, you know, for newscasts and those type of things, but and it's hard to find good personalities on radio stations anymore. And then they have, you know, stations with all kinds of music, and at my age, there's. I'm not quite into Brahms' Lullaby, but you know, I'm not into rock and roll and all of that. I mean, it's but there's a radio station for everybody, and the joy of being in radio is having a station like Alito, on Galesburg, and where they're talking about the people you know, and. It's the local personalities you put on mm-hmm. the station are the ones that draw those people to that station, like you. You've been here, you know, forever and a day, and so has John.
So do you miss it that much?
No, I've really done my time. I really have. Yeah. I mean, you run out of gas after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, Roger, he was telling me driving down here, the business definitely has changed from... Like you said, when you might have been in the golden era of radio, but it's definitely changed. It's a lot tougher right now.
Well, there's so many more television stations. You got. I never competed much against cable television. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how many sources you have for your attention.
Yeah, that's true. It's so true. And then when you the digital media presence now with, you know, the Twitterverse and the Facebook and how that has changed the product, you know, changed the radio product, just the entire media product of, you know, the debate and the poll is, well, are you a radio station or are you a social media division? You know, are you newspaper? Are you social media? You know, you have these constant struggles of where do you put your content and product, or where do you focus your content and your product? And, you know, I guess I'm guilty of it, too, that sometimes we focus too much attention on social media, but what are we? Yeah. We're a radio station, and that should be first. And that's, you know, same with newspaper business, TV business, whatever. You know, so much attention is now devoted to that individual media entity's social media presence.
Well, one of the places where you listen more to radio than any other place is your automobile.
Yeah.
You know, and like I like to tune on, I'm a Cub fan, but I like to tune on if they're playing. And then I like to hear news. And the one thing about listening to the radio in your car, usually you're there by yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So you're at full attention. Well, our time is winding down. I wanted to thank you again on behalf of, you know, the entire Western Illinois region we cover, all the great schools, all the great sporting events, the news, the good and the bad, the product that we present. So thank you. I want people that don't know the guy that brought radio to Alito, I wanted to get you on and archive this, so it's Roger Coleman. So thank you.
At 86, you made my day. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and John Schofield to pick you up. He didn't surprise you saying he wanted to buy a radio station this morning. He just wanted to bring you on.
Yeah. I didn't say what's this all about or anything.
Yeah, no.
All right. Well, John, any last words for Roger Coleman?
No, just, he gave me an opportunity 37 years ago. Did I think he and I'd be sitting here 37, 38 years ago talking about this station? There's no way in the world. I thought I'd still be in Alito and talking like this back when we first hooked up. So
it's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's worked
great
out,
story.
Worked out very well.
I'll have to put an exclamation point. When you came in for the interview, Marilyn noticed you. She was working at the station. And she said to me, she says, that guy's a winner.
And that's what Joho Scheidt said to as well.
Actually, I think she said, you told me, she said, that guy's a keeper.
Yeah, keeper.
Keeper, okay. Yeah.
You're a winner, that's
37 years later, he's still a keeper.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Again, our thanks to the great Roger Coleman joining us on the WRMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning.